The first three verses in chapter 9 glorify the knowledge that is going to be presented. It is guyatama, the most confidential knowledge. And by knowing this knowledge, by realizing this knowledge, one is relieved of the miseries of material existence. It is secret, the secret of all secrets. Everyone is attracted to secrets. But this secret is the secret of secrets. And by understanding it, it gives direct perception of the self. It allows one to realize who one is. It is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting. It is eternal. That if one takes to devotional service, one can always eternally perform devotional service. He does not have to change the process. He does not have to give up what he learns today for another process. It is everlasting. It is beyond the three modes of material nature. It is transcendental. That is the glory, or a glory, of this process. It is that it has nothing to do with the three modes of material nature. It is descending into this world by the mercy of Krishna and the disciplic succession. Golokeda and Premadana Harinama Sankirtan. It descends. It is Krishna's internal energy, actually. And when one comes in contact with Krishna's internal energy, then one learns how to take shelter of that internal energy, because the jivatma, the jiva soul, is marginal, tatastha shakti. It is marginal by nature. That means it cannot be independent. Tatastha shakti must take shelter of either the maya shakti or the antaranga shakti, the internal energy. We cannot be independent. We must take shelter. So when the living entity takes shelter of maya shakti, then he's placed in one situation after another eternally. But when the living entity takes shelter of the internal energy, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasare Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. If by fortune or chance or Krishna's mercy, somehow or another, or desire, somehow or another, if the living entity, if the Jeev becomes fortunate, he comes in contact with this internal energy of Krishna, and the seed of pure devotional service is placed in his heart. And that seed will sprout and grow until eventually the same thing that is placed in his heart as seed, devotional service, the internal energy that will encompass gradually his entire consciousness until he has nothing in his consciousness other than pure devotional service to Krishna. And that will go eternally. It is not that when the perfection is achieved that one gives up devotional service and merges with Krishna. It is not like that at all. One continuously, eternally, this is the perfection of religion, because one continuously, eternally can serve Krishna for his eternal blissful satisfaction. It's a matter of what happens is one's that serving mood, that devotional and serving mood, just clarifies, focuses, concentrates, solidifies. But still, the same thing will be practiced, devotional service unto Krishna. And it will bring us, carry one, this process will carry one to the lotus feet of Krishna. So if one doesn't take to devotional service, the third verse explains, Ashradadanaha Purusha Dhammasyasi Apropyamam Navartante. They do not attain me, either in the Brahman platform or or the Paramatma platform, or the Bhagwan platform, no one can attain Krishna in any of these forms without devotional service. Jnana, karma, they're all dependent on devotional service, while devotional service itself is independent. So if one doesn't perform devotional service, one cannot attain anything except mrityu samsara vatmani. He only obtains birth and death. So that is not a very great attainment. So after glorifying this knowledge that is going to be presented, Krishna will now explain this most confidential knowledge. It is full of Aishwarya. It explains Krishna's opulence. And in the next chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the opulences of the Absolute will explain even more of Krishna's opulences. But this Aishwarya, or knowledge of how great Krishna is necessary. Or else, one will not develop the serving mood. It is essential that we learn of Krishna's opulence, how powerful he is, how inconceivably powerful he is. Otherwise, the actual service, the actual certainty that we must serve Krishna will not develop in our hearts. So this Aishwarya Jnana, knowledge of Krishna's opulence, is essential. Prabhupada in Mayapur during the festival in 1976 was explaining that we are sitting here, so many living entities. There are billions of living entities in this room, or actually there are billions of living entities on this table, or on this book, in this microphone there are billions. So there's hundreds and hundreds of billions of living entities in this room. And this room is one room in this large building. This is the largest building in Vrindavan, perhaps. And Vrindavan is one town in Mathura district, and there are many towns in Mathura district. And we are one of billions of living entities in one of the many towns in Mathura district. And Mathura is one of the districts in UP, and UP, Uttar Pradesh, is one of the states or provinces in India, and India is one of the countries in Asia, and Asia is one of the continents in this world, and this world, the Earth, is one of the planets. We look up at night, now it is the sky is cloudless, and we should look up at night and just see how many stars there are in the sky. One cannot count how many. And these are all within one universe. And there are unlimited universes. The number of universes are compared. Imagine, how big is a mustard seed? It is not even as big as cumin seed. It is very, very, very small. So if we had a big, big, big bag of mustard seeds, this one universe that we're in is considered compared to one mustard seed in a huge bag of mustard seeds. And these universes are coming in and out of the skin holes of Mahavishnu as he rests or as he breathes. And Mahavishnu is an expansion of Shankarshan, who is an expansion of Mahashankarshan, who is an expansion of Balaram, who is an expansion of Krishna. Like that. So, how great Krishna is, and how unlimitedly tiny and insignificant we are. That is why we should surrender to Krishna. Because he is great, and we are unlimitedly insignificant. He is unlimited, and we are unlimitedly insignificant and powerless and tiny. That is why we should surrender to Krishna. It is important, as Prabhupada said in Mayapur 1976, to understand how great God is. And if someone tries to develop his intimate relationship with Krishna without a deep, deep understanding of God's greatness, he will just ruin his spiritual life. He will become a sahajiya. So it is important, very important, that we spend lots of time understanding Krishna's mystic Aishwarya, his mystic greatness. Why is it mystic? Because it is inconceivable how great he is. We can conceive as someone twice as strong as I am, five times as intelligent, 70,000 times as rich maybe, although that's probably even hard to conceive of that. That 70,000 is a lot. But we can 5, 10 times as this or that. But Krishna is unlimitedly more powerful and more beautiful and more wealthy and more strong and more renounced and more knowledgeable and more wise. Unlimitedly more. Unlimited power. So this knowledge of Krishna's unlimited, inconceivable, mystical because it's inconceivable just how great he is. It must be conceived of, the attempt must be made to conceive of it so that we know, have some idea how great he is. Not that we say, oh, he's inconceivably great, but don't have a concept of how powerful he actually is. So now Krishna will explain something about Aishwarya Gyan as a Chintya Aishwarya. Mayeti tamidam savam. So this in 7 verses 4 through 10, Krishna will explain some of his Achintya Shakti, how we can understand him everywhere. Now it's also interesting to note that in the 7th chapter, it begins by saying, just hear about this and glorifying the knowledge that's going to be presented. Then, right after doing that, in the second part of the 7th chapter, there's an explanation of how 3 ways how Krishna can be seen everywhere. So similarly, Krishna is going to explain here how he can be seen everywhere through his and understood in this world. And then in the 7th chapter, what comes right after that? Not how to attain him. No, what comes after he explains the 3 different ways that he can be understood in the material world? Yes. Those who surrender and those who don't surrender is the next thing that's explained. And that's also the next thing that will be explained in this 9th chapter. So mayita tam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina madstani sarvabhutani nachyamtesh avastita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So Krishna, the word used here is avyakta murtina, his form, but it is unmanifest. Mayeti tam idam sarvam, that this entire creation, cosmic manifestation, the entire jagat, mayeti tam idam sarvam, the entire jagat avyakta murtina is pervaded by Krishna in his unmanifest form. So Krishna is everywhere in this material world in his unmanifest form. This entire universe, there is no place where Krishna doesn't exist. His influence, his energy, his potency. Now if therefore one can conclude that Krishna's energy is that what maintains this entire world and universe. Everything is resting upon His potency. Every single thing, whether it's, He's already explained that He has the ability in man, He is the sunlight, moonlight that actually comes later. Everything. Mata parataram nanyat kinshirasti dhanandaya. There is no truth superior to me. Everything is resting on me as pearls are strung on a thread. Everything. He's explained. Bhumi raponalo vayu kammano buddheva chahankra ityame bina prakriti mastaka. He's explained. Jiva bhuta mahabaho yedam daryate jagat. That everything in this material world is a combination of that bina prakriti, the separated material energy, the external energy, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the living entity, the jiva bhuta, which is also Krishna's energy. So Krishna is pervading every single place in the universe. There is no part of outer space that one can go to and escape being dependent on Krishna's energy. Every single corner, aspect is simply Krishna's avyakta murtina. Then Krishna explains, so therefore all beings, because there is no place that is not Krishna's energy, therefore all beings are in me. Because if we are in this room, and this room is Krishna's energy, therefore we are in Krishna. So all beings are therefore in Krishna. But Krishna says, I am not in them. Now Krishna has already said that He is in everything. And He will say it in the 15th chapter, in the 18th chapter, Savasya Jam, Ibde Sanavisto. He says that He has said that He's in every atom. But here Krishna is saying, I am not in them. So Krishna is everywhere. Everything is in Him. Everyone is in Him. Everything is in Him. But He is not in them. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Yet one should not conclude that because He is spread all over, He has lost His personal existence. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. So although Krishna is everywhere, He is not there. Where is He if He is not there? He is in Goloka. Because we should not think that He has any association at all with the material energy. Krishna has no association with the material energy. He is in Golok. He is always situated in His Sarup Shakti, in Goloka Dham. He has nothing to do with the material energy. So therefore Krishna says that I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government, which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king. And each department is resting on the king's power. But still one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists both in the material world and in the spiritual world are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creation takes place by the fusion of His different energies, and as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishtabhyaham Idam Krishnam, He is everywhere present by His personal representation, the diffusion of His different energies. So everything is a manifestation of Krishna through His energies, and He is present there through His energies, but yet He is aloof. Now, this in and of itself is so amazing. This is perfect management. We will call this the no-minute manager, even. Because Krishna, he is doing everything, but yet he has all the time to just dance with the gopis and play with his coward boyfriends. And the coward boys run to him. They're running after Krishna. Who can touch Krishna first? And one boy is taking the lunchbox of another boy. And Mother Yasoda is sending someone to cook for Krishna. And Krishna is coming and herding the cows. And meanwhile, everything is resting on him. Sometimes the concept from Greek mythology is of Atlas. And in New York, on Fifth Avenue in New York City, there's a big, big statue of Atlas holding up the world on his back and shoulders, and it's very heavy, and he's struggling under the weight. He is not dancing. He is not playing with his cowherd boyfriends. He is not milking the cows. For Atlas to hold up the world is a great strain. But for Krishna to maintain all this universe, not only all this universe, but so many unlimited universes, it is nothing. Vistavyam idam Krishnam. It is just mama tejo angsa sambhava. Just some little angsa, one little part of Krishna's power. Not, it's insignificant. Just like when those big ants walk on us, we may feel them walking over us, or a fly or something like that. But when this little tiny ant is walking, we're walking along, we don't even know we have a passenger. We're carrying along this little ant on us, because our power is great enough that it's completely insignificant, that we practically don't even have to be conscious to carry along this living entity. So similarly, Krishna is so powerful that he's not carrying one ant, but he's maintaining, supporting, creating, destroying unlimited universes, and he's not even aware of it, practically speaking. This is powerful. Again, Krishna is explaining to us his power. Why? So we'll be prepared when the 18th chapter comes around, when he says, Savadamam Prityaja, Mam Ekam, to me only, Sharanam Vraja. Yes, if we surrender to Krishna, what is the difficulty? Because he's so powerful. Who will protect me if I surrender to Krishna? Krishna will protect us. Does he have the potency to do it? He has the potency to maintain unlimited universes. What to speak of protecting one teeny ant like me? So Krishna is so powerful. This is the beginning of his explanation of his potency, his Aishwarya. Then in the next verse, so here he's saying, I am everywhere, pervading the entire universe, and everything is situated in me. Matstani sarva bhutani. Everyone is resting, situated in me. But I am aloof. I am not in them. I have nothing to do with this business of maintaining the universe. Nacha matstani bhutani. So we just heard matstani sarva bhutani. Now Krishna is going to change his mind. Nacha matstani bhutani. That's exactly the opposite of what he just said. He said that everything is situated in me, and now Krishna says, and yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Never matstani. Never are all living entities situated in me. Pasya me yogam ashwayam. Behold my mystic opulences. This is my yogam aishwaryam. This is my incredibly this Aishwarya, this opulence of power, is so far beyond our ability to conceive of power. It's so much more powerful than anything we can conceive of, Krishna's yoga aishwaryam, that it is inconceivable. So he says, Paishyame, just try to get a glimpse of my power. Just try to understand my situation, my position. Bhuta vrin nacha bhuta sto mamata bhuta bhavana. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, that's bhuta vrin nacha bhuta sto, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. I have nothing to do with this cosmic manifestation. The same point. For myself is the very source of creation. Because he's a person. And when all the potency, just like if I had 100 diamonds in my hand, and I diffused my diamonds, one diamond, to every person in this room, so I would only have 70 diamonds left, because my potency would have been diffused throughout the room. But Krishna, when his potency is diffused, when he creates unlimited universes, he is not in the slightest bit diminished in power. This is yogam aishwaryam. This is inconceivable mystic powers. We learn in Gurukula. Okay, here's a math test, Nandi. You ready? How much is 1 plus 1? Very good. How much is 1 minus 1?
Zero.
Yes. But with Krishna, you could take away unlimited ones, and you would still have one. You could give out unlimited diamonds, and there would still be the same amount of diamonds. Unlimited, equally powerful Krishnas are produced from Krishna, and still Krishna doesn't diminish in power. So many Vishnu Tattva forms are produced. This is inconceivable potency. So although all living entities are in Krishna, they are not in Krishna because he has nothing to do with them whatsoever. So is this contradictory, that everything is resting in him and he has nothing to do with it?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So therefore it is mystic Aishwarya Achintya Veda Veda. This is actually, this section here describes Achintya Shakti. Krishna is Achintya Shakti. Chintya Veda Veda Tattva. That Krishna, there's nothing separate from Krishna, but Krishna is separate from everything. And the living entities and the material energy, they have an inconceivable relationship with Krishna. That they're dependent on him and they are independent simultaneously. They're bound and free simultaneously. This is a Chintya Shakti. So this is a contradiction. Matstani Savabhutani and Natcha Matstani Bhutani. And why is Krishna allowed to contradict himself? Because he has mystic powers, unlimited mystic powers. Yogam Aishwaram. This is his opulence. Now, here's an example in text 6. Here is an example of how Krishna is working. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. So as all the wind is situated in the sky, yet moving around independent from the sky, so all living beings are in Krishna, but still have their independence and are moving around. Now, and just as the sky is detached from the movement of the wind, similarly, Krishna is detached from the activities of the living entities. Now, one can say, does anyone have any problems understanding this example? Just as the wind is within the sky but detached from the sky, so similarly, the living entities are within Krishna but detached from Krishna. They're moving around detached from Krishna. So one can say that if this is a conceivable example, then why are Krishna's powers inconceivable? I've just conceived of the situation using this example. So I think Baladev Vidyabhusan asked this question and answers it by saying that the sky and wind are inert. They don't have any life. But Krishna and the living entities are conscious. And it is a law that when something is conscious, it becomes attached to that which supports it. And when something is supporting something else, it becomes attached to that thing that is supporting. Just like the child becomes attached to the parents because the parents naturally, the child becomes attached because the parents are supporting it. And similarly, the parents even become more attached to the children because they are supporting the children. So the attachment of the parents to the child is even stronger than the attachment of the child to the parents. So because of this, so it's an incomplete example that Krishna is giving, because Krishna and the living entities are both conscious. So therefore naturally they should be attached to each other. But Krishna is not attached. He is completely aloof. He is beyond the living entities. And why? By his supreme will. He is in Goloka Vrindavan. Are there any questions about this? That's a bit of a tricky point. Thank you, Tom.
We have the explanation in the Bhagavatam creation when Ramachandra is somewhere at one spot, the cloud building up the Mount Bhagavatam. And then you can elaborate this, and we have what Krishna says about it.
No, but he's also talking. He's talking about every energy, not only the material energy. He is aloof. He is not dependent. He is
that source.
No, it doesn't really have any. No.
I don't understand why this example is not why it doesn't hold, because Krishna is detached, so also is the sky.
But one could say that the unparalleled points are the consciousness. It's that the sky isn't conscious, and therefore how can it be attached? It's not conscious. How could something unconscious be attached? Obviously it has its parallel points, otherwise Krishna wouldn't use it. But one could point out the dissimilar points. That which makes it inconceivable is the conscious part of it, which is not present, and that otherwise it's a conceivable example.
Are existing by the supreme will of God, and the subordinate to the supreme will. And the verse 4 is talking about the energies.
I'm lost with your placement there.
Verse six.
The one that we're doing now.
Yeah. Krishna speaks about the will.
Where does he speak about the will? In the purport. So it's not... Well, we're about to read some of the purport.
It's the first paragraph.
Yeah, that's the one we're going to read. So this will explain it. For the ordinary person, it is almost inconceivable how the huge material creation is resting in him. But the Lord is giving an example which may help us to understand. The sky may be the biggest manifestation we can conceive. And in that sky, the wind or air is the biggest manifestation in the cosmic world. The movement of the air influences the movement of everything. But although the wind is great, it is still situated within the sky. The wind is not beyond the sky. Similarly, all the wonderful cosmic manifestations are existing by the supreme will of God. And all of them are subordinate to that supreme will. As we generally say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, everything is moving under His will. By His will, everything is being created, everything is being maintained, and everything is being annihilated. Still, He is aloof from everything, as the sky is always aloof from the activities of the winds. This will actually be explained in the 10th verse. But if you look at it from the point that if Krishna's will is doing everything, that would mean that He is not detached, because His will is doing it. Yes, even though He is doing it, He's completely detached. It's actually inconceivable.
It's a question of the doership.
It's a question of the doership. Here we go with the doership again. Krishna says, I'm not doing anything. The material nature says, I'm inert. I'm not doing anything. The living entity says, you just said that if I thought I was doing anything, that means I'm in illusion. I'm in Maya. So it's obvious I'm not doing anything. Next verse. Now, Krishna has just explained how He is maintaining everything by His will, although He has nothing to do with anything. So one could say that His will has something to do with it, and He's not different from His will, but yet He doesn't have anything to do with it. Now, Krishna is going to explain the creation and annihilation. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. So even in creation, even in destruction, the same truth that Krishna, everything is resting on Him, but He is detached. The same truth is present, it is existent, it is eternally true. But Krishna is the one who everything is resting on, and yet He is completely aloof from everything. So Krishna is the cause of maintenance. And now, that's been explained, and now also explained that He's the source of creation and destruction. This was already explained in chapter 8 also, similar things that in the day of Brahma, everything comes into existence, and in the night of Brahma, everything is withdrawn. So this has been explained in chapter 8. Now, more on Krishna's will. The whole cosmic order is under me. Prakritim svam avastabhya visrijami puna puna. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. So even that, under my will, it is automatically manifested. So if I said to you, oh, you're having a test again, you automatically have a test every week in this class. So after a while, you would get to believe, because it happens so regularly, you'd start believing that it was automatic. But it's actually, it's under my will that is actually happening. So that means I'm the one who's causing it. And that means I'm attached to it happening. So it's not automatic, it's me. If I take away my desire, if I don't bother with it 1 week, then it won't happen automatically. It is dependent like that. But Krishna is, it's automatically happening by His will. Huh? Well, you have to understand. Certainty. Therefore, you have to understand that all contradictions are resolved in Krishna. And that if Krishna didn't possess the power to have contradictions resolved in Him, and if the finite mind, our tiny minds, could fit Krishna's power and understand fully Krishna's power in our mind, then what would be the meaning to Him being God and greater than us? But He's so great that it is impossible for us to understand how great He is. We can explain these points, how it's automatically happening by Krishna's will, actually. So we can logically, using yukti talk, we can logically explain how to show us how separated Krishna is from all this. It's the expansion of His expansion of His expansion is of expansion. He never has anything to do directly with the material energy. On the expansion of the expansion of the expansion of the expansion glances at the material energy. And it's that glance, which is Shambhu, which actually contacts the material energy. Therefore, that Shambhu or Lord Shiva principle is not on the same level as Krishna or Vishnu type, but because it comes into more direct contact with the material energy. But that's give us the idea that how aloof, how many parts and parts and parts and parts and parts it is away. So Krishna never deals with the material energy, but yet by His will, it's happening. Yeah.
There is this one that you mentioned, is that the same one that Arjuna sees in the last chapter?
This will... You mean the Vishwarupa, like that?
Yeah, the one that no one has ever seen before.
But it... That's the universal form. This is many universes. Not only one universe. But it's just... That's to give us an idea how Krishna is... How it is all being manifest by that cowherd boy. Inconceivably enough, Krishna does that to let us understand that. So what is actually happening is Krishna gives the potency to the modes of material nature to work all these things. But yet, He is behind it. Just like I say, I'm not causing the tests. I just give them to Acharyaratna. We empower Acharyaratna to do it. And then Everyone yells at Acharyaratna instead of me when something doesn't happen to me. This is a very good system. You like that system, Nandi? You yell at him or you give him sweets? It also works that way too.
Yeah.
But who won between you and Jalandhar this time? Anyway, we'll talk about next time. So without Krishna, nothing would work. But Krishna doesn't have anything to do with anything to do with the material world. So therefore, Krishna never can be blamed for anything that happens in the material world, and He's not transformed. He doesn't have anything to do with it, and He's not attached at all to anything in the material world. So the whole cosmic order is under Krishna. Under me, Krishna says, under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjay, all this work cannot bind me, because Krishna has spoken so many times of being bound by the fruits of work. But Krishna is saying here that although I'm doing all this work, it cannot bind me. And for the same reason, it does not bind the living entity when he works. If the living entity works according to Krishna's direction, he won't be bound, for the same reason that Krishna himself is not bound when he works. And this is explained in this verse. All this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though I'm neutral. So udasina varasinam ashaktam teshu kamasa. That is neutral. Udasina means neutral. And situated though neutral, ashakta, without attachment. So Krishna has explained also in the third chapter that if I did not work, all the world would be put to ruination in those verses 321 or so. And I am working. Still, I do work. This is the work that Krishna does. And he's completely neutral. and it's going on. And he's completely unattached. That will be explained in the next chapter, or rather later on in this chapter, when he says, Samoham Salabhuteshu Mane Name Dreshu Stinapriya. That I am equal to everyone. I am completely neutral. Samoham Sabhabhuteshu, Krishna will say. So how is Krishna neutral? And this is, here comes the point about will. Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Characharan Heturanena Kanteya Jagatvapiti Vajate. So Maya Dakshena is a combination, a sandhi, of three different words. Maya, meaning my, adhya, meaning under, and aksha, meaning eyes. So under my eyes, under my will, under my supervision, like that, by my superintendence, as Prabhupada translates it. Maya dakshena, by my superintendence, prakriti suyate sacharachana. It is manifesting the moving and non-moving living entities. Hetunanena, for this reason, O Kaunteya, son of Kunti, Jagatvapirivartate. The cosmic manifestation, Vapirivartate, is working because of Krishna's superintendence, but he is completely detached. It is this detachment. Although he is doing everything, he's detached. Who does anything without some attachment? Even the Nishkam Karmi is attached to the work, but Krishna is not attached to anything in this world. He is only attached to one thing, and that is bhakti. And that is not in this world or of this world. That is of the spiritual world. That is Golokera Premadana Harinamasa. So this material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So this verse is very important. Maya Adhya Aksha. Under my eyes, under my superintendence. But Krishna is completely aloof nonetheless.
Maya Adhya Aksha.
Maya Adhya Aksha. So an ex... Huh?
Adhya means...
Under. Under.
Can also mean... There's another spelling.
Another word, one could even say. So we shouldn't think... It's very tricky what Krishna is doing. He's establishing himself as the ultimate cause, sarva karna karnam, but he doesn't have anything to do with it, the material world. So how is he the ultimate cause? But he is the ultimate cause. But he has nothing to do with the material world directly. But under his supervision, it is all going on through the expansion of his expansions of his expansion of his expansion of his expansion of his expansion, like that. So how inconceivably powerful he is. So an example of this, the Acharyas give an example of this, that Maharaj Ambarish, we all know about Maharaj Ambarish as being a great devotee, and Maharaj Ambarish, he never spent any time managing his kingdom. He spent all his days, all his time in puja, in worshipping. Savaya Krishna Pararavindaya. His mind was engaged in serving the deity, his hands were engaged, his tongue was engaged, everything was simply engaged in deity worship. But yet the kingdom was going on by his influence. The potency of his influence. Like this. But all his energy was spent in his puja. But yet everything was going on by his influence. His presence. Prabhupada explains in the purport to 10. Because he glances over material nature, there's undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person, yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There is a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, he has nothing to do with this material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature, without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot do anything. Yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. This is a Cintya Veda Veda. Well, Krishna is not different from the material world, but completely different from everything. Okay, we'll stop here. So again, Krishna is explaining this Aishwarya Gan, this inconceivable potency of the Lord, to allow us to understand how great Krishna is, that he can do this.
Krishna is explaining the mechanics of his cosmic manifestation, and he say that he is aloof, maybe even he doesn't care about it because it's his expansion of expansion of expansion. But yet he comes here, or he sends his representative, so he does get involved. How can you explain it?
Because when he comes here, he is not here, he is there. He's never actually descending to the material world. He's never actually in the material world. He's always in the spiritual world. But we can see him. That's his descent, is that he allows us to see him here. Although he is in the spiritual world and we are in the material world. He's never in the material world. To be in the material world means to be under the control of the three modes of material nature. He is never under the control of the three modes of material nature. When Krishna comes, it looks like his lila is not a lila. It is like a man's, a human's. But it is not human. Anytime he wants to do something extraordinary, he just calls on Yogamaya. So it looks often like the same laws of material nature that affect us are affecting him. So it looks like he's in the world. But if he's in the material world, how is he lifting a hill with the little finger of his left hand? No one in the material world can do that. How can he open his mouth and show the universes in his mouth? How is that possible? Because he is in the universe, right? And the universe is in his mouth. So how could he open his mouth and show something that show himself in his mouth if he's outside his mouth? Boing. So it's quite inconceivable. But Krishna this is his business, being inconceivable. He has nothing to do with the material world directly. Indirectly, yes. So when he comes to the material, we say that he descends and he comes to the material world. But that is for the general understanding. But actually Krishna doesn't come to the material world. He always takes the spiritual world with him when he comes.
So according to the analysis you just gave, sometimes as devotees we'll see some disaster, some earthquake or something, and we'll say, well, you know, Krishna really gave it to them, or something like that. So in one sense that's not an accurate statement.
But in one sense it's not an accurate statement, and in another sense we can say it is an accurate statement because he saw Vakarana Karana.
But a clear understanding.
But why do we say that?
I guess we say because we want to see Krishna everywhere.
That's yes, and also because we want to see Krishna everywhere, and we want to stop thinking that we're the one who's the cause and the doer. So it is a big step forward when we understand that Krishna is the cause and the doer. But actually, it is not Krishna, it is the Super Soul who is sanctioning everything. But who is doing it is the material. The material nature is actually doing it because of the sinful reactions of the people. But it is doing it on the sanction of the super soul under the eyes, Maya Dakshina Prakriti, under the superintendence ultimately of Krishna. But this is actually the super soul.
There seems to be two things that is being emphasized, that Krishna is detached from the material creation, but at the same time they are living in the material creation. So even though Krishna may not have anything to do with the material nature, dead matter, but he has some relationship with the living entities who are in the material.
But everything is going on by prakriti.
But still Krishna has
Ahankara Vimudatma Kartaha Mithi Manyate. We're not doing it, but who is doing it? Who does Krishna say is doing it?
In the third nature.
Huh? Yeah, material nature.
I'm not really speaking of doing it. I'm speaking about relationships.
But it's the same. The Jiva Shakti is, they're just, it's Shakti.
But Krishna has love for living entities, right?
What does samoham sarvabhuteshu mean?
Samoham sarvabhuteshu is equal to all the entities.
He's neutral. He's neutral to the living entities in this world. When they become devotees, he gives up his neutrality.
So
he gives them. Yeyetam mam papadyante. That's like if you have a very dear friend, and he says, give me a sweet. He wants a sweet, you give him a sweet. He says, give me a broom, I want to sweep the floor. You give him a broom. He says, give me some poison, I want to take the poison. Do you give it to him? No, because of your affection for him, you're not neutral in dealing with him. But Krishna says he is neutral in dealing with him. So many living entities take poison every day. Why is Krishna allowing it to happen?
The destruction is just of the body, not the destruction of the living.
But because, right? But that, but still hurts a lot because they identify with the body.
Living entity cannot be destroyed.
Huh?
Living entity cannot be destroyed.
It can't be destroyed, even though some people want to destroy themselves. But Krishna is dealing with the material world, and the living entities who are materialists in the material world is Udashina, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu. But as soon as they want to become devotees, that changes to Maya Tateshu Shatyaham. They're in me and I am in them. Until you become a devotee, Krishna practically speaking isn't there. It's just the material energy dealing.
Also, is explaining it in a Brahma Samhita that Mahavishnu, when he glances over the material energy between the nature and the living entities, the main reason with that, why he does that is out of compassion for the living entities.
Oh, there's so many ways to explain that.
Because they, by impregnating them with material energy, they will consume their karma, they go back to his eternal lila.
Yes, but which living entities consume their karma and which living entities simply create more karma? Is that your experience in preaching all over the world and your experience of 40 years living in the world, that the living entities are exhausting their karma? Or are they just creating for every cow that they take part in killing, they have to take as many births as hairs on the cow. So how many hairs are on a cow? Too many. Nandu, come back! We need to know something. How many hairs on a cow, Nandu?
Too many.
Too many. See? I knew that. Too many. Too many. So for, you know, for 1 hour's work, you get billions of years of results. So it's not that karma is being consumed, it's being increased, practically. But for the devotees, it's being consumed. So actually, the material world is created for the devotees, so that they can complete their sadhana and go back home, back to Godhead. That's a fact. But of course, Krishna is merciful to living entities, but not directly. Basically, he's merciful through the devotees. That's his Kripa Shakti, through the devotees and Shastra. I think we all are full of inconceivable thoughts. One last inconceivable thought.
He spoke about the Shambhu in the living entities, and he spoke about the
love that Krishna has.
I told you it was inconceivable. Yeah.
So what is the relationship between Radhishu
and his glance? That is the relationship. Mahavishnu and his glance. Huh?
The glance is stronger than the
take.
Take.
All glorious to Krishna's inconceivable potency.